everyone, and welcome to the Sweet Mates Music Show. We talk about music news, music reviews, and music exposés. My name's Bailey.
And I'm Noah.
And we are on our first episode of our very first podcast.
Ooh.
Woo-wee. We love music, and like most millennial slash post-millennial people,
we're not millennials.
We're not millennials. Okay, whatever. Like post-millennial people, we're making a podcast about it because we want to talk about stuff. Yeah, and we're just friends. We're sweet mates. We share a bathroom, and we're some sweet pals.
That is the explanation of where that comes from. So
we
aren't
roommates, but we share a bathroom that makes us sweet mates.
Right.
And we're sweet friends.
Okay.
They get it?
They get it.
Okay. Do you want to explain to the, not the viewers, the listeners, on how we became sweet friends, or sweet mates, sweet pals, sweet buds?
You mean and share a bathroom?
Well, that too, I guess. Yeah, so, that's important to know.
Myself, I come from a mostly Midwestern family, but not Midwestern enough for there to be any reason why I'm down here in central Southern Indiana. Most of my family is from the Chicago area, but
Gurnee, Illinois.
Gurnee from the Gurn. Shout out to everyone in the Gurn.
We love Feel the Gurn.
Yeah.
Feel the Gurn.
That's a good one. I'm surprised. That's a good one. I've never heard that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Trademarked.
Yeah. Okay. I hope so.
Hashtag Feel the Gurn.
Anyways, so I decided to come to Indiana Wesleyan University down here in Marion, Indiana, where we both go to school. And I came into school not knowing a single soul, but I was randomly paired with my roommate and two sweet mates. My roommate Josh, bless his soul.
R.I.P. Josh.
R.I.P. Josh.
He's not dead. He just doesn't go here anymore.
Yeah, which is basically the same thing if you're a Wesleyan. that's what I've learned. And my two sweet mates, Bailey and Garrett.
Yes.
They've been friends what, like 11 years?
11 years. Yeah. We met in second grade. No, first grade. We met in first grade, and we were friends throughout elementary school and junior high and high school, and then we decided to room together.
I bet I could tell you. I think I remember how you guys met.
Tell me.
You both had folders with, was it Pirates of the Caribbean?
Yeah. We had Pirates of the Caribbean folders in first grade. And I said, I like your folder. And he goes, I like your folder. And then we became friends. And we're still friends today.
Yeah.
Now Noah and Garrett are roommates. And our friend Sam and I are roommates. We still share a bathroom.
Yep.
And we're still sweet mates. So, yeah.
Still qualifies. But
here we are.
So the first day that we were moving in, I remember kind of taking the first step and going over to Bailey and Garrett's side to kind of introduce myself. And I noticed that Bailey was setting up his record player. I was just checking it out, and I was like, hey man, there's some pretty cool records. And he was like, yeah, I do collect records. And I was like, hey, what kind of records you got? I like Bon Iver.
Oh my god!
And he was like, "Oh, it's Bon Iver."
thank you.
and he was like, "I'm gonna buy the Killers soon." And I was like, "Hey, that's like my favorite band."
And then we became friends.
That was it.
Yeah.
I think.
And then we went to dinner that night. And we started talking about. I think you were like, "Hey, man, I can play The Boy Who Blocked His Own Shot by Brand New." And I was like, oh, do I love that album? I love that song. And so we just bonded over music. And we talked about music for like a whole year. Noah actually makes music on Spotify. Shameless plug number one.
First of many.
It's going to be
sure.
We're gonna shameless plug Noah's music in every episode.
Just in case you miss one.
Yeah. So follow Noah to George on Spotify.
Bailey, you're the scum of the earth.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm so worst. I was like, Noah, you turn
you're like,
sound
hey,
off
make sure you turn your phone on silent. Make sure your computer sound is off, okay? We wouldn't want any embarrassing interruptions
hey, you know
like
what?
That.
You know what? It happens when you it says live. We're doing it live.
Right.
It's like live theater.
Just go with the punches.
Go flow with the go.
Go with the punches.
This is a mess. This is a whole mess.
So
anyway.
Let's talk about why we're here.
Yeah.
We are doing this podcast because both of us are clearly passionate about music. And the best way that we could share this with you guys is we want to just talk to you guys about what interests us and the kind of things that we're jamming out to.
Right. Yeah.
And so we're going to start first our first episode with talking about our top five favorite albums in no particular order.
Which is a hard task to do.
It is.
Ranking your top five favorite albums in no order, but still being like, these are my top five favorite albums of all time. These have influenced my music taste for, you know, years. This is why I listen to music I listen to today. This is why I make the music I listen to today, right? If I'm you. And so yeah, we're starting off our podcasting journey. We're going on a journey. We're going on an adventure.
Yes, we are.
We're Bilbo, and we're going on
Bilbo
an adventure.
Baggins, more like Bilbo Swaggins, because our music is so cool, and you'll all love it.
Yeah, you're gonna love it. And so we decided to do our favorite albums of all time in this video, and we'll go on and make some more lists so you guys get to know us, and then we'll get into music reviews, music essays, etc. And we'll talk music with some people that make music as well. Shout out to those future episodes and those future guests. So without further ado, we should talk about our five favorite albums of all time.
Yeah.
Noah, do you want to? We're going to go back and forth. Noah's going to say his, I'm going to say mine. And that'll be our episode. And we'll just talk about it. And hopefully you guys will find some carryover here with your favorite albums or albums that you've heard of or love or whatever. So yeah, Noah, do you want to go ahead and you want to talk about your not your number five favorite album, but the first album you're going to talk about today?
Yeah, the first one I want to talk about is a more recent album that I've kind of been digging recently. It's Birthplace by Novo Amor. Mm. And Birthplace came out in late October of this year, 2018. And there's something really special about the way that Novo Amor makes music. And just his values as a musician are so much about the kind of things that the kind of feelings that he can evoke with music. And I think something that'll be interesting to maybe talk about is kind of some similar artists to the ones that we'll be talking about today.
Yeah.
I would say probably most prevalently, if you're a fan of Bon Iver,
it's Bon Iver, Noah.
If you're a fan of that one, I'm just going to refrain from saying it.
Justin
Vernon's
Bon Iver, is that what you're talking about?
If you're a fan of Bon Iver, okay, I'll humble you there.
Thank you so much.
If you're a fan of Bon Iver, you will absolutely love Novo Amor.
They have a very similar sound.
They do. And I wouldn't even say that it's, you know, one or the other is lesser than, only because it's difficult to compare them in the sense that you're going to find the same things when you listen to them. Absolutely going to find different things. And a big part of Novo Amor's most recent album, Birthplace, is, I mean, most simply where he comes from. It's music that defines where he comes from and where he's going.
Yes.
And I think that there are a couple songs in the album that highlight that best, being State Lines and Birthplace itself. I think that those are really amazing testaments to kind of what he does and the journey that he's come on so far as a musician. So, but the album overall, the thing that I love about it most is its flow. And it's hard to do this in certain albums when you're trying to make music that is intentionally an album as a whole instead of a collection of, you know, of separate singles,
right?
When you're trying to put together a story in album form. And one of my favorite parts of this album is the transition between, there's a song on the track that's only a minute and 20 seconds, I think. It's 13:04:94, that seamlessly transitions kind of obviously as a prelude, but transitions into the song State Lines. Mm. And with those two songs together, the album as a whole, obviously those two are connected because it is a seamless prelude.
Yeah.
But the album as a whole, it flows in this way that no song is easily differentiable. And not in the sense that every single one runs together, because that's certainly not the case. There are so many songs, almost every song on that album stands out as its own piece of work.
Yep.
But each song is recognizable as the same chapter in a story. And I think that that's something that Novo Amor captures better than a lot of artists that try to do this. You always see artists that are trying to put together, you know, oh, I'm going to make this awesome song and then I'm going to put a prelude to it because that's going to evoke some sort of, ooh, there must be something special about this song where the prelude means something. They have to put it in a whole separate track.
Right.
That's just not the case here. And Novo Amor is able to put this, you know, whole entire story into an album while still using those amazing transitions. And the best part, I think what makes these transitions so seamless is Novo Amor's style. And that's, I think it's best characterized as atmospheric. Mm. Atmospheric is the best word that I can use because, and even with the song 13494, it sounds like any one of his songs as you hear the song along with the rest of the album, and you know you know that it's a Novo Amor song, but it kind of strikes you as kind of surprising that it's an instrumental song, that it's only a minute and 20 seconds long. Sure. Because all of his music is so atmospheric, but in ways that capture nature. And I know that a lot of his influence, I think this is kind of what I want to wrap up with as far as talking about this, is that most of his influence comes from a lot of his time. He's an artist based out of Nova Scotia. And so, a lot of his influence is kind of the world around him and how he started making music, living in his own world. And then juxtaposed with that is his time living here in America, which I think is really great. A lot of his influence comes from a place that's special to his heart, that one of his first EPs is titled after, is Woodgate, New York. Yeah. And the time that he spent there learning how to write music, learning how to kind of develop his own style of folk, I would say. And that's just something that really shines in this album. I wanted to include his another one of his full albums, Eris, which, if you like his stuff, it's worth a listen. But I will say that album does sort of drag together in this way that each song is kind of in the same vein. And that's not to say that they're bad songs, but this album, Birthplace, really, really stands out with each track. And at the same time, it's all characteristically him, which is really beautiful. I think that's why it has a special place on one of my top five favorite albums.
Yeah, for sure. And I think to distinguish him and Bon Iver apart, because when you listen to Novo Amor, it's instant. Like the similarities between the two. I think Bon Iver is a lot more, I think, abstract in his songwriting and a little bit more obtuse. Novo Amor is a lot more, I would say, accessible and direct. And so it's a lot about storytelling. And I'm not saying with Bon Iver it's not storytelling. I'm just saying it's a little bit more direct storytelling. Stream of consciousness storytelling, if you will.
Yeah.
Okay, so my first pick on this list is an album by a young woman named Julian Baker. It's her first full-length album. It's called Sprained Ankle. Sprained Ankle is an album that I found over the past 2 or 3 years. I think I found her on an Audio Tree session. Shout out to Audio Tree.
Shout out, I guess.
Our first sponsor. We're sponsored by Audio Tree.
Hey, Audio Tree, if you're listening.
Sponsor us.
For this really minimalistic shout out.
But I found her on an Audio Tree session. And it's literally just her and an electric guitar. And I found that very interesting because Audio Tree sessions are very intimate sessions, but it's a full band. It's always very interesting to watch all musicians work together, but it's her and an electric guitar, and on one song it's a piano. And so just to hear her really strip it back, I was instantly intrigued. And she has such an interesting and distinguishable voice. It's almost like you take an artist like David Bazian from Pedro the Lion, and you take his music to the eyes of a female who is struggling with her faith, and you're struggling with her own demons of substance abuse and anxiety and depression. And this whole album feels like a confessional. She definitely wears her emphasis on her sleeve. People like Pedro the Lion and Death Cab for Cutie, but she's so uniquely herself because of the personality in it, how intimate she puts you with herself, how she reveals all these intimate details about her past life and her struggle with substance abuse and depression and suicidal thoughts. I mean, the whole last album, or the whole last song rather, Go Home, is about her trying to kill herself and struggling with substance abuse. And then the last, you know, minute of the song is the you know, the chords for In Christ All on the Piano. And it's just this juxtaposed, like, struggle and then finding, you know, the one thing where she can find her solace in, which is this simple chorus, this simple, you know, indicative of the Christian faith.
I do want to add, because I also love this album, but not only this album, that song in particular is so meaningful and so raw.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's so interesting when the chorus of, or not the chorus, but the verse of In Christ Alone is playing, you can hear a televised preacher.
Yeah. Yes, that's very important.
And
yeah.
The televised preacher is kind of this thing where it's like, you can imagine her being, I think she's just in her early
20s. She's 22. She was 19 when she recorded the album.
And that's something that, you know, for her struggling with her faith, you can imagine her being a child and knowing what faith is, but, you know, running into all these problems and all these struggles and, you know, thinking back on where her faith came from, which was, you know, most likely a televised preacher
and her parents,
you know, her parents. Yeah. And that's kind of how a lot of that goes. I think that it's definitely worth a listen. And that the televised preacher, the verse that he talks about, I won't go into it. If you want to go into it,
right.
You can.
So I just thought about it. So talking about Go Home is like the whole song is called Go Home. And you think it's about going home to heaven, going home to death, you know, just ending it all because it's not worth it. And, if it's really as sentimental as we're talking about, and she's referencing a message or a verse that she heard when she was a child, wanting to go home to her roots, like wanting to go back when things were simpler, when she wasn't being abandoned by lovers, as the song Something talks about, or she wasn't warring with God, as Rejoice talks about. These are songs on the album. And it's just like this full, you know, cycle of her feelings, her thoughts, her opinions, and they're completely uncensored. And it's so beautiful because you get to hear her deepest and most personal thoughts. And it almost reads like a diary or confessional. I asked myself when listening to it, should I be hearing this? Because it's so personal. It's so intimate. And it really details her deepest struggles. And I think that's so unique. And that's such a strength of Julian Baker. Amazing songwriter, amazing voice. Just an excellent, excellent force in independent singer-songwriter music today. Really got me into the whole bedroom pop genre, like with, you know, people like Snail Mail and Phoebe Bridges, who's an artist that's like Julian. And yeah, it's a whole other genre of music. Julian's so unique and so incredible. So what's your next album, though?
So the next one I want to talk about is kind of a biggie.
For both of us.
But I definitely, I put this on my list because I definitely have a connection with this album. It really does mean a lot to me. So the album is Midnight Organ Fight by the band Frightened Rabbit. Now Frightened Rabbit, I'm not just a fan of because, you know, I have a t-shirt and I can say like, hey, look, I listen to Frightened Rabbit. You know, I'm so much cooler than you. Even though I probably am, but that's not, you know, that's not the point. Okay. Right. But the point that I'm trying to make is this album specifically, the band itself is fantastic. And there's so much, raw emotion in all of that they do. But this album specifically is something that, really hits close to home for me personally. So the album title it comes from the song Fast Blood on the album. And the song Fast Blood is kind of about the rush that you get when you're intimate with somebody, you know, that you think that you love. And the best line in that song, apart from, you know, the album title coming from that, but the best line in that song that I can use to describe kind of the overall message of even the album maybe is talking about intimacy and describing it as the longest kiss goodnight is kind of how you view intimacy with a partner when you're with them. And then the rest of the album goes on to completely deny that. It goes on to portray intimacy with the wrong person. And it does this so well because personally, I struggled with this at the time that I listened to this album, and I kind of realized, you know, all of the ways that that Frightened Rabbit is able to portray these feelings of intimacy in this gross way, and all of its hindsight, and it's deeply, deeply personal. There are some metaphors in this song, or in this album, I mean, in each song that just aren't for some people. They're a little bit grotesque and, you know, it's unavoidable. But at the same time, it might be things that people need to hear, things that people need to kind of understand, is this metaphor is nothing but the truth. When you know that you've lost somebody that you think you should have been intimate with, and how that kind of clutches you and won't let go. And I think that a really amazing, I think the best testament to that message of all of the tracks on the album is the song Poke. It's my favorite song on the album. And the song Poke kind of describes this lost love as a pet that you loved. and whether or not you should, after it dies, should you take care of it and, you know, bury it in the snow, you know, in remembrance,
yeah.
or should you completely, you know, disregard it and disrespect it? And, you know, Scott, the lead singer, is able to use some pretty pervasive language to convey that point. It's, you know, borderline explicit.
Right.
But there's so amazing of metaphors that really can't be, they can't be denied, in the sense that if it hits home with you, you'll know.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Like the whole, I get all of their albums, and like, obviously, like what happened to Scott, he killed himself this past year, this past March, right? Yep.
March or April.
The spring of this year. He clearly was warring with a lot. On this album, it was love and intimacy and feeling close with somebody and not knowing how to deal with that. And in an album like Pedestrian Verse, it's God and religion and, you know, warring with yourself about, is it true? Is it real? Are my doubts, you know, like those human things that we all think about. Substance abuse and the winter of mixed drinks and the panic of a panic attack, you know, mental illness itself.
Yeah.
And just like, Scott was just constantly warring with all these things, and this album is definitely a perfect representation of, you know, the struggles that we all have with love and intimacy, but someone who puts it out there so plainly,
yeah,
and almost crudely,
yeah,
and that makes it the most human and the most raw, I would say.
I also think a really good point, kind of going off of that, is that that noise right there was our AC turning on. And that's all I have to say. I think that we should probably move on to lighten the mood.
So the next album I will be talking about, the next album on my list of top five, is Forget Not Slow Down by Reliant K. An album that was formative in my music taste as a young person, as, you know, as young as 10, hearing this album, the lead off single Forget Not Slow Down specifically, because it was one of my brother's favorite albums. And he loved Reliant K. And by proxy, I loved Reliant K. And I think as a Christian kid, it's one of the bands you listen to. And I think, you know, there's a distinct difference in their discography where, you know, they're a point A, where they're kind of this like Christian punk rock group or pop punk group. And it's like, yeah, but their messages are inherently Christian. So it's like immature in a way.
Yeah.
And this album shows us this massive mature step. And their past two albums, 5 Score and 7 Years Ago, and really showed them stepping in this direction. But Forget Not So Down is the first time that like they really stepped into their own and became their own band and their own unique thing. And I think it's a brilliant moment in their discography, because it talks about a lot of things that I think their listeners were going through, whether to take the feelings of the past and either discard them or push forward and press into them. And he's talking about a wide array of things, may it be, you know, religious doubt or mental illness or, you know, romance, just everything. Actually, it's about his time in Indiana. He lived in Indiana for about a year, and it was the worst year of his life. He hated it so much. I know, right? Awesome. He said that at the concert. He was like, "The song's about my time in Indiana, and it's Forget Not Slow Down." And everybody was, you know, laughing because it's, you know, it's a song about moving forward and forgetting this period of time. And it's just really interesting because it shows just a massive jump in maturity. And songs like Therapy and Forget Not So Down, I Don't Need a Soul, Candlelight, Sahara, just the whole track list is all about growing up and getting older. Not only getting older like as a person, but, you know, like musically maturing, going forward. And I think it really echoed their listeners at the time who were also growing up and becoming young people. And just musically, it just really rocks and rolls and really got me into indie music as a whole. It's a very death cab sounding album, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And introduces like acoustic guitars and just these really, really simple melodies, and also hard rock songs like with songs like Sahara. Just there's so much variety on this album, and I really appreciate the songwriting and the production on it. Just a really, really good album.
I just wanted to mention, also I'll ask you this as a question, but I did kind of forget that, I was going to list off some similar artists, to the ones that we're talking about, just because, we're pretty much music gurus and we know better bands than you do. And
really now, are we? didn't know that.
And I just think that, obviously some of the bands that we'll be talking about over the courses of our episodes, are going to be ones that you might not have heard of. And so I'll just say my piece and then I'll ask you. I would say that if we're talking about Frightened Rabbit, mm-hmm. Some bands that I would compare to them, it's kind of difficult. I mean, they're their own little niche sort of
sound. What's that other band from Scotland?
Yeah. What's that other band?
There's the other one. Scotland? Oh, we were promised Jetpacks.
Yes.
Very actually, similar. Yes. Very similar band.
Very similar. And so you're going to get, you know, if you listen to Frightened Rabbit, you're going to get a lot into, some more folk alternative, I would say.
Like Manchester Orchestra kind of stuff too. Yeah.
And with Julian Baker is almost in the same vein as Frightened Rabbit with some of their newer stuff.
Yes.
Again, she is more in the singer-songwriter kind of.
With Julian, you get like Snail Mail Now, Phoebe Bridges, Lucy Dacus, Pedro the Lion.
Right. And you mentioned some of those.
Death Cab. Yeah.
So I guess a question I'll ask you is, what are some bands that maybe by proxy you listen to after listening to Reliant K?
Reliant K got me into, I guess, opening up to the idea of independent music or indie music as a whole, because the album is very indie rock sounding, and is so different from the rest of their discography, because they've only been messing around with like hardcore and post-hardcore and pop-punk music, and now they're in like including very indie melodies with acoustic guitars and strings and trumpets. And, you know, it's so musically complex. I would say because of it, I got into Death Cab for Cutie, and yeah. I got into bands like that. And, The Rocket Summer also at the time, mm-hmm. Jack's Mannequin was a big one. I think I got into Jack's Mannequin because of Reliant K, because they went on, well, Matt Tiesa went on tour with Andrew McMahon on his last tour as Jack's Mannequin. They toured together, and they have a very similar sound, kind of like that, like piano/indie rock. I think they have a very, very similar. So I think Jack's Mannequin is the big one, and just opened me up to the idea of more independent music. So what is your next pick, Noah?
So the next pick that I've got is, again, a little bit deeper into the canyon that is in independent music.
Sure.
So this album is Young Bloomer by Valis.
What is that?
Well, I'll tell you. First, Valis is spelled V-A-L-I-S-E. For those of you that have never heard of the term Valis, because I certainly hadn't when I found this band. And this band sort of comes from this soft indie rock scene. And a lot of their music is kind of in that category of, you know, doing something instrumental, you know, not because it's going to fit a song, but doing something instrumental because you're exploring.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the best song on that album that is a representation of that is Strange Light. Okay. There's something so odd about that song that, you know, you're not really going to find another song like it. It's a slow song, but at the same time, it's introspective. It's the sound is very surrounding. And it's pretty atmospheric, I guess. Not quite as atmospheric as I would describe Novo Amor. It's atmospheric in a different way, where the instruments each take their own personality. And that kind of carries over across the entire album. In songs like Twisted Up, where the drums the entire time are playing with the snare not tightened. Which I think is
That song.
It's such it's such a weird thing. Is it something you don't hear very often, and the song and the entire album lends itself to that creative exploration type of independent music,
right?
And I think that one thing that always heightens each song is the vocals. It's the lyricism that is so confusing and odd and just unnatural in this really pleasant way. And the, mm-hmm. you know, the way that I can best describe it is saying that each song kind of gives you this sense of wondering. And for me personally, I've listened to this album all the way through time and time and time again, and I can't make heads or tails of what any of the songs really truly mean. And a big part of that plays into this being Valis's only album. This is the only studio album that they have. I think just recently they went on a short tour where they re-released onto music platforms a 4-song EP that they had recorded in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And that music is a little bit more just generic, you know, alternative rock. But you can still see kind of the journey. I think that actually helps. You can see the journey of, you know, that short little EP transitions into the kind of avenues that they've explored in this album, Young Bloomer. And just the ways that they're able to make kind of this mysterious feeling with the instruments and the lyrics. Each song kind of has this feeling that you know what each song is. It's good that each song is discernible. But at the same time, you don't really know what they're talking about. And I think that it's great because it's not like you can't follow along. And, you know, this type of music always lends itself to this, where when you don't really know what the artist is talking about or what they're specifically referring to, you kind of take each piece of the lyric and you determine what meaning it has for yourself.
Yeah.
And this is something that's super important that that most of the bands that we're talking about are able to do this, is take their music, you know, and what they've written and what, you know, what has gone into them writing it, and write it in such a way where certainly it means something to them. It has to.
Yes.
But at the same time, you know, you can see that, but also you can interpret what it means to you personally.
Yeah.
I think that this is best said by the musician, I think he's the 60s and 70s musician, Gilbert O'Sullivan, in the song Alone Again Naturally. Is a great tune, and it was in its time the most depressing song ever. And each verse is just filled with all this heartbreak and sorrow and pain. And one question about this song, I mean, I'm like, you can't even imagine the kind of raw, blunt lyrics where he's talking about the singer, I should say, the perspective, the point of view, the person who is speaking is talking about both of his parents dying, one of them dying and then the other dying of grief and sorrow. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, a lover that rejected him and therefore he, you know, planned to commit suicide, and the people in his life are just kind of like, well, we lost another one. Jeez, you know. Okay. And it's such a sorrowful song. And when questioned about it, he said, yeah, none of this applies to me. This is not, you know, none of these situations have happened in my life. I wrote this because I want other people to connect with it. I want other people to say that this goes, you know, this goes along with my life. And and so I think that Valis does that kind of in this new way, where they talk, or, you know, the lyrics in their songs are so unnatural and so odd that you can't help but, you know, derive meaning in your own life. I think that's something that they do really spectacularly.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah, it's definitely a really interesting album. Very vast and expansive. A lot like, I would say, From Indian Lakes. Listen to them. Like, I think his voice sounds a lot like blues singer of that band. And because of Valis, what other bands have you found?
What I've listened to? A couple that I've found that aren't necessarily as artsy or introspective, but ones that I've found because of them would be bands like Victors, bands like Jet Black Alley Cat. They're also in, kind of in that same genre of, you know, exploring instrumentally. Again, those bands don't really hold a candle to the kind of things that Valis can do with their music.
Sure.
But they're definitely, I would also say the one that probably strikes me as most similar is the band Keen, or Kian, however you want to say it.
Keen.
I've said Keen. I've heard other people say Kian.
Kian.
Yeah, I don't know. Not like...
like who? Like the Spanish who?
Yes.
Kianis.
Yes, definitely like that. That's what they meant.
By K-E-A-N, and they meant Kian.
Right. But by the band Keen also has this same sort of explorative, instrumental... nice balance between artificial music and introspective lyrics.
Sure. So on to me.
Yeah.
My turn, I guess. So the next album we're going to talk about is a real lighthearted affair. Well, it's two albums in one, because I couldn't decide. It's from a band that is like soaked in controversy.
As lighthearted as you can get.
And I'm going to say the name and you're going to be like, oh, that's, well, controversy.
I'm sure everyone will be thinking that. Exactly.
The Devil and God Are Raging Inside Me, or Deja Attendu by Brand New. These are albums Okay, so my first exposure to Brand New was listening to Jude Law and A Semester Abroad on like my Blink 182 Pandora station in like junior high.
Ooh, Pandora. Remember, and I was like, remember the good times of Pandora?
Yeah, and it's like the worst. It's like the worst music platform now.
You so, still
yeah.
use Pandora.
Shout out to you. You're a trooper.
No, just stop.
Yeah, you should stop using Pandora. Get Spotify like the rest of us, you clown. Anyway, yeah. But yeah, I found Brand New and Jude Law and A Semester Abroad on that station, and I was like, what a good pop punk tune. And fast forward like 2 years, I was in ninth grade, I was in pep band or in band class. My friend Aaron showed me this song called Jesus Christ, and it was by Brand New. And I was like, this is the same band that wrote Jude Law and A Semester Abroad. And he goes, yeah. And I was like, my mind was blown because they're entirely different genres of music. And this is why it's hard for me to pick a favorite Brand New album.
Right.
Or like, because I know one of them is in my top five. It's one of these two for sure. And they're very different albums. Devlin Got a Rage Inside Me is a lot more slow-paced and patient indie rock, similar to like Manchester Orchestra. Like, I guess a little bit more airy Manchester Orchestra and a little bit more dense and visceral.
Right.
And like Deja Tendu is almost like a Taking Back Sunday record, where it's like a post-hardcore album. And both of them mean a lot to me. That Devlin Got a Rage Inside Me is about Jesse's personal demons and warring with his own thoughts of religion and his own mistakes. Like the first song, Sowing Season, the first lyric he says on the album is, I've been losing all my friends, been losing friends to drinking and to driving, been losing all my friends, but I got them back. And like on his first record, on Your Favorite Weapon, he talks about on the song 70 times 7 how he wishes somebody would go out drinking and crash through the window. And so it's a retrospective on the mistakes that he's made, the choices that he's made in his lyrics and his life, as we learned later what he's talking about.
Yep.
You know, his crimes with younger listeners. We get it now. And it's like this dark realization that he is such a like troubled person. And that's very clear in Devlin Got a Raging Inside Me and those struggles. But on Deja Tendu, I mean, like songs like Me Versus the Maradona Versus Elvis, like, bah, like it's right there. It is right there. And it's just like he can take these struggles and put them in such poetic language. And it's like he knows how bad of a person he is. And like he doesn't, you know, keep away from his listeners.
Right. No, and I think that something that is – that is embraced fully is regret.
Oh,
this, and yeah. Especially you mentioned it before, but especially the song Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Is the second half of that song.
That song punched me in the face. When
oh
I
my
first
goodness.
Heard it.
It did.
It. Yeah.
Why do we listen to so many troubled people?
Oh,
why, are we troubled?
They make the best art.
Are we troubled people?
I would say no. I would say we're not troubled people.
Go check out my album, Even If No One Listens. And
oh, what a troubled young lad that Noah George is.
And you'll know.
He's so sad.
You'll hear a troubled soul. I'll tell you what.
Oh, my gosh. Don't compare yourself to Jesse Lacey,
hey,
please.
Listen, oh, no. On no level, please. But I will say, so the song Jesus Christ, the second half of that song, the best way that I can describe it is this back and forth tussle where it's, you know, he's saying like, hey, could you help me out here? Obviously
yeah.
talking to God, he's saying, could you help me out here? Cause I'm really struggling. But at the same time, like even if I know that you will help me out, I'm not 100% sure if I'm going to be accepting of that.
Right. And like, there's that line where he's like, I know you're coming in like a thief. So can I have some time alone to hone my lying technique? And he's like trying to grapple with like, if this is a real thing, if you know, if you exist and you're going to come take me away, then can I at least prepare? Like, because
yeah.
I know that what I've like, my favorite line of the song is my bright is too slight to hold back all my dark.
Yep.
And I think that's just, it's so reflective of a person's sin and the way that they view it. And being like young Christian people, you know, sinning and making a choice, you know, to actively disobey, like, how do you deal with that? Do
yeah.
you repent and turn the other direction, or do you feel self-loathing and do you continue to it? I think it really asks that question.
And a whole part of that is, do we, you know, as believers, do we have the faith to say 100% that if we do repent, that, you know,
yeah.
are we actually forgiven? Because, you know, some of our stuff sucks.
Yeah, for
right?
sure.
And I mean, obviously neither of us would compare ourselves to him.
No, of course
you
not.
You know, and the things that he's done, but it asks that same question.
Yeah, and the whole album, you know, poses the question of humanity and are we worth saving? Are our sins worth, you know, being forgiven? Songs like Limousine and Handcuffs and, you know, it's just such a dark and troubled album reflecting on humanity. And it looks at our dual nature of like wanting to be better and choosing to not. The devil and God are raging inside me. And I think it's really, really beautiful. And in Deja Tendu, you know, it sounds a lot like albums in that generation, Taking Back Sunday, etc. The album title in Latin means already heard. Like, mm-hmm. people have already heard this, just not from this perspective. And I think Jesse offers such an interesting perspective. And that's why it's hard for me to pick a favorite, because it really just, you know, gets me like just thinking. Like, he's definitely a very poetic person. Yeah.
So we're going to move right along to my next pick, would be the album Oh Wonder by the band of the same name.
The self-titled record.
Their debut album. This album, I mean, there's not a whole lot that I have to say about it, in terms of, you know, how deep it goes. I mean, I know we've been talking a lot about, kind of the things that some of these musicians are able to do, but Oh Wonder, is able to do something, very different of, what we've talked about this episode so far. And Oh Wonder is a band that really gave me, inspiration for me to say, you know what, I can pick up a guitar, you know, I know four chords.
Yeah.
Why don't I do something with this, you know? And because that's what it is. It's so simplistic, you know, two voices and, you know, and some synth beats and a piano.
Right.
Is all it takes for these people to really showcase what they're capable of. I think that every single song on that album has its own place in the album itself. Especially, you know, I mean, the songs don't go as deep as, you know, maybe ones that I'm used to listening to. But certain songs like Shark, are just musically so intriguing. And I think that's why it has a special place, in my top five,
right.
Is that, Oh Wonder is just musically so different from anything that I've heard before.
Sure.
Especially in the time that I discovered this album. I mean, I can specifically remember, going song by song, listening through the album. And this was at a time where I was making conscious decisions to give an entire album a chance.
Mm-hmm. It's important.
It's very important, yeah. Because, you know, you'll miss out on some of the killer ones.
You're missing, you know? Half the point if you don't listen to the whole album.
Yeah.
Or most of the point.
And so a lot of them, I mean, sure, some of them are love songs, and some of them are kind of personal reflections on lost love, or, you know, one of the songs that's gained a little bit of popularity recently, I think it's Landslide, is a song that they wrote for the lead singer's brother, who had just had a bad breakup.
Right.
You know, and sometimes, you know, it's stories like those that shine the brightest when someone is able to do something musically not like anything else.
Yeah. They're like the Chainsmokers.
Yes.
But good. Yeah. Like, if they were good.
Right. Imagine the Chainsmokers, but good.
Yeah.
I really,
and that's
a
wonder.
There's not a whole lot else to say, about that.
Right.
Just that, again, I would definitely give them a listen.
For sure. If you haven't, you should.
If you haven't, you should.
They're a good night drive band.
Absolutely.
There's a song Drive, you know?
Yep.
Drive. Yeah. So my these two albums that I'm going to talk about next are my top two favorite albums of all time. So my number two pick is For Emma Forever Ago by Bon Iver. And I'm very passionate about this album because I found it when I think I was in junior high and I was going through one of my other Pandora stations. I think I found Bon Iver with, you know, Mumford and Sons and Of Monsters and Men, like, you know, those.
Yikes, you were that kid?
Yeah, I was. I was such an indie kid. I listened to Mumford and Sons.
You like Peter Bjorn?
Oh, I love that Peter Bjorn guy. God. I love that young folks tin. But yeah, I found him, or, you know, Bon Iver, the project on one of those Pandora albums. And I was just really intrigued by it because I knew my brothers listened to it. And I had always thought it sounded very strange and just very ethereal and odd. And he, you know, I couldn't understand what he was saying. But after diving into That's the best part of the whole thing. After diving into it myself, it's a song that's coming from, it's a whole album coming from a place of just pure heartbreak. He got out of a bad breakup. His prior brand, D'Armond Edison, broke up. He had pneumonia. He was in a really bad place. And so he's like, to cure this, I'm going to do it the way I know how to is just go to a cabin somewhere and record an album. And it's flawless. And it like from top to bottom, it's stark yet so full. You know, it has songs like Skinny Love, which is like one of like the indie kid anthem.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, right? But there's so many good songs on it. Stacks, The Wolves Part 1 and 2. Other songs like Blindsided, that's what Hall I was thinking scene. About. Hall Scenes on the second album.
I'm trying to trigger you.
Anyway, it's just such an incredible album. It's full and stark and beautiful, coming from a place of pure heartbreak, and really got me into listening to stuff like Julian Baker and got me open to the idea. It's such a win for singer-songwriter music, and it raises the bar for every artist. It really does. I think it's really a triumph of music. The instruments used in it, the lyrics used in it. The lyrics are supposed to be kind of cryptic because only he understands it.
Yeah.
And I think after more listens, it's a lot easier to understand. So yeah, For Emma Forever Ago by Bon Iver is my number two favorite album of all time.
Yeah. And so the last one that I'm going to talk about, my number one favorite album on this list, and probably my number one favorite album. I think that's why I wanted to say this for last.
Album is on my list too, but I had to knock it off because it was on Noah's list.
And that is Hot Fuss by The Killers. We're finally there.
Yeah.
Hot Fuss. There's so much that I can say about this album. I will say, when I was, I think it was, you know, when I was in seventh grade was when I really actually made the decision to not just listen to Journey's Greatest Hits and
Electric Light Orchestra.
And Electric Light Orchestra and Bryan Adams and everything that my parents
Bryan Adams.
I'm not a Bryan Adams fan. I will die. I will die before anyone.
Heaven was your bop. Is Heaven still your bop?
Stop. I'm just saying Cuts Like a Knife is the best Bryan Adams song. Okay.
Shameless plug.
But again, so I was listening to music that my parents handed me.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a problem with that. I will say that The Cars is one of my favorite bands.
Right.
It's good music regardless. But I started making decisions based on what I thought was good. And I stumbled upon the album itself, not just, you know, being that the white seventh grader that heard Mr. Brightside at a school dance.
I love that meme where it's like white people that hear Mr. Brightside and it's just like a beam of light.
Yeah, that's me.
That was you.
That's me.
Yeah.
But Hot Fuss in and of itself is this amazing work of art that, mm-hmm. dare I say, is The Killers' best art. And
I mean, there's nobody who's arguing that.
Right, and that's the thing is I'm definitely not saying that.
I think it's day and age.
Well, listen. Hot Fuss was the first song or the first album that I rented from the library in
really?
CD format. Yes,
you're that guy.
Along with Day and Age. And I listened to both of those consecutively. And I'm not saying that their work has decreased since Hot Fuss.
It has.
No, it hasn't, okay?
Sam's Town's good.
You're Sam's Town is good, all right? I know that Battleborn is controversial. Well, not.
I like Battleborn.
I love Battleborn. We're not here to talk about that, though.
Killers episode coming soon.
Right. But we're here to talk about Hot Fuss and what it does musically is it's so weird. It's such a weird album. There are songs that some people will never hear. They'll say that they're Killers fans and that they, you know, the deepest they'll go is they'll say that they like the song When You Were Young. You know, and they're like, oh, I like a song that's not on Hot Fuss. Check me out. I'm cool.
Yeah.
But there are songs on that album that make absolutely no sense.
Such as,
I will say that some of the lesser known ones that are like, you know, oh, this is a weird tune is Believe Me, Natalie. Definitely. What's it called? Jenny Was a Friend of Mine.
Andy, You're a Star
is not one of my favorites. But again, it's a weird song. On Top is... You know, weirdly kind of, it's kind of
on top is a jam.
It's kind of provocative in a fun way, but it's still a little bit dark.
It's so Vegas because they're such a Vegas band. I mean, they're from Las Vegas and like that album is so reflective of the glamour of Vegas.
Yeah.
And the B-side on the album is Glamorous Indie Rock and Roll. And that's who they are. They're glamorous, yet they're indie and they're like arena rock, but they're like good
like in your face new shooting stuff at
right.
you know
and like I wish that arena rock sounded this interesting today.
Oh yeah,
because you get, you know, bands like Imagine Dragons who are making the same song over and over again.
Yeah.
It's frustrating to me.
Another episode
The Killers are taking their influences and making something wholly their own.
Yeah.
And they're becoming their own band. They aren't making their influences how they define themselves. They are so themselves. And like, we argue about this, but all these things that I've done is like, it's like the arena rock song for our generation.
It is
like just screaming, I got sold, but I'm not a soldier. Like, it's just,
right.
It just evokes that feeling, you know. It's so epic. It's just an epic album.
I definitely want to end that with saying that I do have a favorite song on the album, and I know it's not popular. It's the last track on the album, "Everything Will Be All Right."
Mm-hmm.
I know that that's not a popular pick because it's a messed up song.
It's a weird song.
It's such a weird song. But it does something with minimal instruments. I think that it's so cool. That they can take influence from bands like Bizarre Love Triangle and Depeche Mode and make this weird futurist kind of sound,
right?
That is absolutely, no one can kind of claim it as their own.
And that's what I love about this album too, is because it's huge, yet it's so intimate and small.
Yeah,
you know, like you have songs like All These Things That I've Done, which is massive, and I'd say Mr. Brightside is a pretty intimate song.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
Like, comparatively, and so this album just really covers the gamut of modern rock music and has raised the bar for all alternative and indie rock bands.
Absolutely. For sure. And I mean, it's just, you can't deny that there won't be bands like The Killers anymore. I mean, I know that their most recent album is not, they're not what they used to be.
It's not, okay? Not good. Run for Cover is a good song.
Run for Cover is a great song.
Yeah.
But that's all I'll say about that is the Killers have influenced literally everything that I have listened to from that point forward. Yeah. There is not a band that I can't trace back to the Killers.
I have an interesting story. So like, this is the last thing I'll say about this album is when I think I was fifth or sixth grade, I was playing on my Xbox 360. I was playing Sonic Unleashed, and my brother,
What a game.
I love the Werehog. No. Okay. So I was playing Sonic Unleashed, and my brothers had preloaded albums on their Xbox. One of those albums was Hot Fuss, and I listened to it over and over again at that young age, and it was just like, it blew my mind that an album could do that thing, and I was just like, I want to listen to everything that's like this, I love this so much.
Yeah.
It blew my tiny mind. So the last album that I'm going to talk about is my favorite album of all time. It's this piece of music that is so important to me. It's Transatlanticism by Death Cab for Cutie. So I found this album. So I was introduced to Death Cab when I was in ninth grade. I'd always heard their name before, and I was like, who's that weird emo band?
Right.
I found them in ninth grade when a friend of mine suggested that I sing I Will Follow You Into the Dark for like a show choir like showcase. And so I listened to the song, and I was really into it.
The emo song of our generation.
I'll Follow You Into the Dark. So I played, I sang it at a show choir like contest, or I think it was a showcase. It was a dessert thing. And I just got really into their whole album. I listened to Plans first, and I really love Plans, but Transatlanticism is like eclipses Plans completely because it's so emotional. Every song is a different feeling and a different genre, and just reflects like the mind space of whoever's telling the story. Like, I have lots of theories about this album. It's a concept album about two lovers being like literally broken up by the sea, and the whole album starts right after one lover is dropping his girlfriend off at the airport. This is the new year, and I don't feel any different because it just happened. And the last song is, you know, years later when he can't help but call her, and he's drunk and he doesn't know what to do because he's just sad. A Lack of Color is just like one of the most beautiful sad songs I've ever heard, and just, it's this piece of music that touched me at a time when I needed it. When I was struggling with anxiety myself, when I was getting introduced to that idea, and I didn't know, I was scared. And this album helped me through a lot, just categorize my feelings and you know, help me think about something that wasn't, you know, how anxious I was or how sad I was. And it was just like really transformative for me, and just, it's perfect from top to bottom. I know every note and part of this album, because it's just this detailed, intimate description of a relationship, like past, present, future, retrospective, forward thinking. It's so beautiful. And all indie rock music is trying to be this album. And I it's got me into like every other band in the world. Bands like Intuit, Over It, from that to like Manchester Orchestra. And, you know, I don't know. It's just my favorite album of all time. It always will be. Death Cab for Cutie, Transatlanticism is a near perfect, you know, piece of music, and I listen to it all the time. I know every part of it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I'll leave that to you because I don't have much to speak to as far as Death Cab for Cutie. I'm not as big a fan as I know that you are.
That's, not many people are.
and that's not in saying that that I don't like what they do. I've just not been exposed
to it. And they're my favorite band. I love all their albums for a different reason or another. I even like Thank You for Today, which is their newest album, which is objectively their worst.
Yeah.
And I still like it. Just because it's so death cab.
Yeah.
I love it so much.
So we've been through each of our top five favorite albums.
Yep.
And I hope you can tell that we're passionate about this.
I hope that you could hear our passion in our voices. Yes,
something like that.
I don't know where that voice came from.
I never do that again, please.
We'll shake on it. I promise I'll never make that voice ever again.
Great. But here we are at the end. I hope you guys enjoyed listening. And I really do hope that you guys, if you're somewhat like us, I hope that you not only check out these bands and these albums that we've talked about, but branch out. Don't be afraid to kind of just listen to what might kind of scare you, you know? I think that, you know, with social media and the internet today, we have so many avenues to explore what intrigues us.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what fuels, you know, creators creating is doing things so that people will be interested.
I guess my one thing that I will say, and then we can sign off, is like, if you want to create, do it. I've had several examples or several times where I've started something but I never finished it because I was too busy or too scared and I didn't think my opinion matters. Your opinion matters, your point of view matters. People, the world needs people like passionate people like us. So please create, make something cool. Listen, come to us next week when we talk about something new.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have probably a guest on next week, one of our friends.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Let us know what you want us to talk about.
Yeah.
We'll probably talk about it.
Maybe. Find us on Spotify, iTunes, any place you listen to podcasts, guys. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time.